And I think at this point, we will we'll open the floor to questions and about specific issues that people are encountering. You know, remembering Seth's disclaimer that he's not able to offer you legal advice, and will disavow all knowledge if you as a threat. His little tape recorder is going to self-destruct here in a few minutes. But if we do have questions about specific things that people are encountering, obviously we have one, I know. Maybe we can talk about those and the dynamics of how that maybe how to approach officials and how to go about doing that. So. Open, the floor is open.
Is it all me then?
It's all you.
All right, I've already told the story a couple times tonight, but City Sammamish had this beautiful library. They decided to build a new one, so they gave the old library to the Boys and Girls Club, and we turned into a teen center, and we had some professionals come in and put some incredible audio equipment in it, built a stage in there. So, in the teen center, we were in the after-school program, and then we could do shows at night. But unfortunately, we started getting phone calls from the neighboring apartment complexes, just about, you know, they could hear the noise, they could hear the beat, kind of things like that. And at first, it wasn't a big issue at all, because it seemed like the neighbors were calling just about any time there was noise in the entire city. Even if it was not us, if the new Trader Joe's was moving in, they were complaining to us, or, you know, the local football team was playing a football game, and they were complaining to us, so I didn't think much of it, but then they brought the complaint to the city, and then police started being dispatched to our center, and some police officers would come out, and the cars driving by the teen center were louder than the music that was escaping the building. You couldn't even hear the music when cars are driving by, but once the cars stopped, then you can start hearing a little bit. And some police officers were just great. They'd come in, it's like, hey, what, you know, it doesn't seem that bad. No, it's okay. We'll just keep playing. We can turn off by 10 o'clock. But then we had an issue where some police officer didn't like coming down and talking to us about it, and they would have to shut down the music. And it's gotten to a point now where we've been asked not to have any music whatsoever. So right now, City Sammamish is not allowed to have rock shows, concerts, anything like that, or unless it's a community event. And it's, once again, it's kind of in the, you know, whoever the police officer is that's out there. And the ordinance is 75 feet. And none of them have any of the, I don't know if you guys were talking about earlier, the noise recorders or the level.
Right.
Yeah, none of them have that. They don't want to get them at all.
Yeah.
And I know that's not an easy answer to this.
You might, so the state code applies to the whole state, whether regardless of, you know, whatever local noise ordinance is there. If you can show that you're meeting the state ordinance, then you might have a leg to stand on, even if it isn't. But at the same time, the state ordinance doesn't nullify the local ordinance. So, you might be able to, you know, at least have a conversation with the jurisdiction, whether it's the city or the police or whatever, and say, yeah, it's audible, but look, it's not unreasonable because it is meeting this the state code.
I think there's another question that has to be answered here, because I think this is a political problem, not a compliance problem. Is any funding of your organization coming to you from the local jurisdiction?
We rent the facility from the city of Sammamish.
Okay.
Yeah. So there's any, because there's been brought up, hey, why don't you fight the noise ordinance? And it's like, well, then we get rooted, the YMCA comes in. So
yeah,
it's
exactly.
Not really an option
you,
for
you
us.
You try to fight it, they'll just shut you down. It's a political
right.
problem.
Yeah. It is nice. We have some community supporters who have gone in and spoken to the city about maybe getting this changed or something like that, but I don't know how much pull they have.
I've seen this before, but try having any kind of a club with live music in Ellensburg. You know, the people who run or control the politics in that area have decided that thou shalt not. And you may be running into a similar situation where you're at, where it's completely irrelevant whether you're in compliance or not. Somebody has just decided it's that they don't like you, they don't like what you're doing, they can't get at you this way, so they're going to get at you that way.
I mean, they found a crack. They figured out how to get it shut down, and it was go to local law enforcement.
A lot of people are afraid of the idea of what you do.
And it's also, I mean, I think a lot of people are familiar with Sammamish. It's grown up quickly. In the last 15 years, I mean, dirt roads 10, 15 years ago in that town, and it's still there. You have the half the community that still want to be a bed and breakfast community. There's a half that realize there's 6,000 teens in that community, and there needs to be something for them to do. Mm-hmm. So there's that battle going on, and the bed and breakfast part is winning.
Yeah, so I think your solution is actually going to be on the political front. Find out who your political allies are, how much clout have they got, and then try to go back to the city with some kind of a mitigation plan and say, look, if we do this, will you let us start up again?
And that's actually right where we're at now. Rick's been helping out. Him and Paul Russo had a consultant, so he came in and gave us kind of a first step. Hey, have these people come in and give some suggestions. If it's curtains or soundproofing some of the windows or whatever. Yeah, our issue now is we got to find some financial backing. As a nonprofit, we don't have a bunch of money to throw into soundproofing this building. Yeah, but at least we're showing the city, hey, we had a consultant come out, these are the steps that they're asking us to do, and it's kind of leaving it at the hands of the community.
Well, that takes you into another problem too, because at this point, it's not your structure. So how much will they let you do to the structure in order to be able to create the kind of mitigation that's going to be required?
Well, so we have control over everything on the inside of the building. We can do whatever we want to the inside of the building, which is nice. The outside of the building, that's their, they take care of that.
So you can treat it if you can find the funds.
Exactly, yeah. So at least we have a little leeway there.
So there was no treatment when you moved in?
No, and like I said, it used to be a library. So it was built to keep noise out. And the way the roof is built, so it curves, and then we have these big giant windows right at the top. And those windows shoot right up to one of the apartment, and it's just one level at this apartment complex. And we were talking earlier, we don't get a lot of phone calls during spring and summertime because there's all these trees out there, and the foliage comes up, and all of a sudden it's totally complete. But during the fall, when it all dies, fall and winter, it's gone. Those trees are gone. They're dead, and leaves are gone, so that noise is kind of right up there. That's where we're at.
Yeah, like Daniel was saying, a lot of times it's more political than anything. So, if you find the right people to appease or negotiate with, that may be the route.
So I got to do more butt kissing.
if you're pretty sure that your problem really is what's leaking out of those windows, then that's actually relatively easy to deal with.
And I'm hoping, because that, Rick, when you were there, that seemed like, he said it was a significant difference.
Yeah. Well, I mean, the windows are, I think they're quarter-inch glass, and both panes are the same thickness. Mm-hmm. So that's an issue right there, and they're large. Mm-hmm. So that's a significant leak.
You think you're getting diaphragmatic resonance through?
Yeah.
You'd have to be if both panes were the same thickness, because they will both resonate at the same frequencies.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was amazed that the structure was more opaque than I guessed.
Windows often have a lot of leakage through the frame too, especially if they're operable. Are they fixed or
no? They're fixed.
Okay, then that may not be an issue. But glass is bad news no matter what you do.
Yeah.
It can be fixed, but it's not all that easy.
So the consultant also considered that the complainant probably was guessing many times that the teen center was the source of the noise. And they were using one of their decision criteria was, are they open? And so blocking the windows with velours would help from a standpoint of providing some local absorption and blocking the light. So now they can't tell if they're open or closed. Mm-hmm. And that could be a huge plus.
Yeah, you'd be surprised at how much what you can see affects what you hear.
Third time I've heard that from GAA members or a couple people here tonight too.
Another thing that you could do that would just be a little bit of ammunition on your side, and it's something that I actually did over at Chop Suey, was I set up test and measurement equipment, and then I measured all around the perimeter of the building at street level, up on the roof, and had documentation that showed with broadband peak noise being pumped through the system at extremely high decibel levels inside, you know, levels that were equal to or exceeded what any show would ever be, I could hand somebody a file and say, this is the loss through the building, and this is how much you're getting outside it, you know, at these points in space. So you can go into this conversation with the people that you have to deal with, being able to provide documented evidence of just exactly what kind of leakage is occurring. But then again, like I said, even though we did that, we still had that acoustical anomaly of the resonant space that we had to deal with, so we had to go back and do further treatments. And one thing that may not be a bad idea is to go pay a visit to the person who's complaining and say, look, you know, I want to work with you, so why don't you show me what the problem is? Why don't you let me take some measurements inside of your house and see, you know, see what's in, you know, your apartment, to see what's going on here? And that also may help you to build the bridge that you need to show them, look, right now I've got the system cranked over there, and look, you don't hear it right now. You know, things like that. I think if nothing else, just the interface with them would do a lot to tell you whether or not they just hate kids.
Yeah. Well, that's what initially the complaints, I was the one that was dealing with the complaints, and then we had some problem. I think I mentioned we had a few complaints about we weren't even open.
Yeah.
The site was not even open. And so the local law enforcement were telling me, just let her be. But then it became too much. And what do you call it? The noisiest wheel gets the grease.
Yeah.
Kind of thing, and that's ended up what happening was that she was complaining too much, and so certain officers got tired of it.
Yeah, but once again, this may have nothing to do with noise whatsoever.
Right.
She may just hate kids, or
yeah.
she may
yeah.
have a religious bias
mm-hmm.
against the kind of music that you're playing, or a cultural bias, or anything.
But
like
I do have to say, she didn't complain the night we had the Microsoft Orchestra in there doing a fundraiser. It's typically when we have rock bands
mm-hmm.
coming through.
So, Daniel? So there was the other person is working. He works at Microsoft, but he also plays in a band.
Mm-hmm.
And funny thing, so they had a big concert there. What was that? Was that Valentine's Day? Washington's birthday? Something like that. Anyway, so they didn't load out that night. They loaded out the next morning,
mm-hmm.
and she called and complained. And the noise source was the Presbyterian church three doors down.
Yeah, that's really, really common.
Interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, you know, those rappers.
Yeah. Presbyterian rappers are the worst.
we had a situation like that with WOMAD. I was the sound police for WOMAD.
Yeah.
And one of the things that we did in advance there was we partnered up with the local authorities before the gear even went in for the concert to happen. And so the first day of the show, I'm already in meetings with the local jurisdiction. We already have a plan in place for how we're going to control sound on site and how we're going to monitor it. And then we also had a plan in place where every complaint that came in was personally investigated in the field by me. And I found that when you work with the authorities under those bases, you know, when they know about it in advance and you have a plan to partner with them, they were extremely cooperative. And in one instance, we had a complaint that came in from a very improbable distance from the show site. So I went out to investigate that, and after interviewing a few people in the area, what I was actually able to determine and prove was that, in fact, they weren't hearing the concert at all. It was just a band that was playing in the cabana of a local apartment building for a party.
So WOMAD was at Merrimore?
Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. And so you're putting out sound toward the lake, right?
Yeah, so
and
if
big flat surface,
if Merrimore orientation
spaces.
Is like this, and then there's like a rise of low hills out over here, And so way out there is where that one complaint came in from. And that was absolutely not legitimate. But we did have some legitimate complaints on the rise of hills that were up here on the very first day. Mm-hmm. But we were able to get all that under control. And after the first round of field interviews that I did Saturday morning, we never had any other issues at all.
So how did you how did you get around, get through the complaints? Well, re-aiming, things like that?
What was the mitigation?
Yeah.
Well, the mitigation was to have a very strongly enforced sound pressure level that that everybody had to follow. So every front of house position had a dB meter right on the console. Mm-hmm. And no front of house engineer could start a show without me allowing him to begin. And part of the process was, okay, you're going to mix this act on this stage. I'm going to put you through the orientation. Here's the meter. Here's the rules. If you violate it, you're going to get warned. If you violate it again, you're going to get shut down. And we had very, very good compliance on that. We only had one incident, really, of any flagrant violation, and that wasn't the engineer's fault. What's his name? Perry something from Jane's Addiction.
Lee
Scratch Perry is a Jamaican guy.
No. Perry Farrell.
Right,
yeah,
okay.
Perry
so Farrell. So he was doing a solo DJ act on a stage that was over on this side of the park, which was close to that rise where we had had a few complaints. And it was a mistake of scheduling. It was booked to happen in the afternoon. And anytime you have that kind of an act, like another good example on another festival where I was the sound police, we had the Chemical Brothers. And they take the stage, and they're bombing massively because it's just not quite sundown. But as it gets darker and darker, and you can see more and more of the light show, then the audience starts responding more and more and more positively. You just cannot schedule that kind of act if it's not nighttime.
Yeah.
Nothing is more boring than watching a DJ or a couple of guys on synths in the middle of the day. So so Perry's bombing, and his manager got on the line from backstage up.
And there is some... there's some sources on Meyer's site.
Having had personal dealings with Bennett,
and there's Bob,
I would be suspect of his methodologies.
He started the thread, and other people chimed in and talked, showed their experiences.
But, for instance, I loaned him some of our 421 subwoofers, which are naturally cardioid and do not require a rear-firing element, and gave him specific instructions about how they were to be operated, and he chose to not only completely ignore the instructions about how to operate them properly, but then to publicly slang us off for not getting the desired results. And when I called him out on it, he just said, "Oh well, what you told me to do, I would never do that," you know, and then continued to slag us off publicly for not getting the expected results, when all the while completely refusing to comply with the factory's recommended procedures.
Well, that's neither here nor there for the discussion of what's in a thread that he started. The information is interesting, and there's a variety of places. Meyer Sound has some stuff about it too, although that thread was the most helpful.
So we had a special summer meeting to explore that.
Right.
So there's a meeting report in the archive for that.
Thank you.
And that was my system at the zoo, and we came up with a particular configuration that worked fine for that stage configuration and then completely didn't work for the other stage configuration that we went to, so we had to come up with something else. And I did, and it was a lot better for that.
And remember, it's not free. If you create a active cardioid sub situation, you will lose efficiency.
Yeah, because you have to dump the power in to cancel that out.
Well, not only that, but think about it. If you've got low end wrapping around the front speaker to the rear in order for the rear speaker to be able to cancel it, that also means that the emanation from the rear speaker is going to wrap around to the front of the front speaker. The rear speaker is operating at a lower level, and so the net effect is you get a heavy cancellation in the back, but you do get some cancellation in the front as well. And if you measure it out, you'll find out that the total efficiency of the system is decreased by operating it that way.
Well, maybe you still get your intended benefit.
Oh, you do. But when you think about having to double power to get a 3 dB increase, we're not talking about something that's totally inconsequential when you're working in large concert venue situations.
What's your experience on the typical efficiency losses in the product?
It's been a while since I've tried to do it that way because the product that we made was naturally cardioid without having to resort to that method. But I seem to recall that the losses were under 3 dB, but not completely inconsequential.
Yeah.
And there's different methods. There's some where there's a rear-firing element, and the one that I found worked best for me was to have three forward-facing elements that were just timed so that this one goes, and when the sound gets to the next one, it goes, and when the sound gets to the third one, it goes. And there's no active cancellation. It's a cancellation due to whatever that is.
That's called the shotgun array. And if you check,
called end fire too.
Yeah. If you check Dave Ratt's writings,
I know
that he's experimented with it and he's talked about it on his site.
But the benefit from not having the sound go that way is way offsetting to any cancellation or any reduction of volume concerns and my opinion. So, and it's a specific situation. So a solution too.
You can also use steering techniques because it isn't always just sound coming out of the back. You may have an issue with sound going off to the sides.
Right.
And so there's ways of building arrays where you can cause all the sound to just steer straight forward and not go out to the sides. I did a nightclub in Detroit that was all brick except for all along the main street on this side was glass. Mm-hmm. But I did 12 double 18s on their sides going this way horizontally underneath the stage and created a low frequency line array so that it towed in the low end so that it just perfectly shot down the building, and you could walk down the sidewalk right on the other side of the glass, no drapes, no extra panes, no nothing. You could just walk down the sidewalk when the show was going on, and you heard very little bass.
So the array must have been huge.
It was.
It, 40 hertz.
Think about the size of a double 18 box. And then think about the distance that 12 of them make when they're lined up in a horizontal array. You've got to have a fairly long distance between the outside boxes in order to get that to work. You can also play games with delays of some of the elements as well and get stuff to steer that way.
Yeah. Other questions? Are we running out? I think maybe we should call it an evening. And thank you, everyone, for coming. Thanks to Seth for being here. And keep an eye on the website and the Facebook page, and also we'll get a ping through the members list as soon as we set up our June meeting. So we are working on that.
Thank you.